Welcome to Module 3, and here we are at Lesson Number 13, and we're going to be looking at resolutions, a little bit about their secret language, meaning some of what is contained within the UN resolutions is not so obviously clear unless you understand some of this quote-unquote secret language. And then we're going to go over how to use the UN document resources. Now, the way this is going to get broken down today is the secret language. We're going to look a little bit at the legal status of resolutions, their structure and their numbering, the drafting and adoption of resolutions and decisions, and how and where to find them, and how to use the UN's online document system. Now, in fact, always so much in each lesson, and yet you'll be surprised at how quickly you will learn a lot of this. So the legal status, I've referred to this a couple of times in previous lessons, and I have indicated that basically UN resolutions are not binding unless they're from the Security Council. I want to go into that just a little bit more, because not all Security Council resolutions and decisions are binding. Some of them are recommendations. So you've got your Chapter 7 resolutions, which are the ones that are binding on all member states of the United Nations. Those that come out of Chapter 6 are customarily spoken of, even within the document itself, as recommendations. And so that's where they stand. So some of the documentation that comes out of the Security Council still remains not binding. Part of why I said that earlier is that as a general way of thinking about things, Security Council resolutions will capture people's attention to look more carefully at the resolution and to see exactly what it is. And they do tend to carry more legal implications for the nation as a whole. Now, moving on to the General Assembly. Their resolutions are generally, as we've said, not binding. Most of the resolutions that you hear about, even the more major resolutions such as the Millennium Declaration, are in fact not legally binding in the same way that Chapter 7 Security Council resolutions are. To distinguish here a little bit, and I believe I've made a reference to this earlier, but they're resolutions and decisions. Decisions are usually referred to as those resolutions that essentially deal with procedural issues of the council itself, of the assembly itself. Now, in fact, these decisions are binding on the nations. They do not deal with actions that directly affect the member states' nations, but these decisions as to how to proceed, when to meet, what you can and cannot do within the procedure of the General Assembly, these are binding on those nations as they, and those resolutions are usually referred to as decisions. So in the end, you usually have to look at the larger picture and not just take statements at face value when you're talking about anything at the United Nations. So you have to always pay attention to who's saying it, who is saying it, meaning is it the Security Council or General Assembly, and what is the intent and purpose, and so on. ECOSOC usually are organizational types of resolutions. A lot of the work of ECOSOC is to coordinate activities, help create information, resources that allow people to make best decisions as to how to proceed on certain areas of economic and social significance, and therefore, of course, are not usually legally binding in that sense. So that's just very quickly on that side. Next, we want to look at the structure and numbering. Now, resolutions. When you look at them carefully, you'll discover they are one long sentence. And in the whole document, even if it's pages of a document, usually there is just one period. Otherwise, there are colons, semicolons, and there may be paragraphs, they may be numbered, they may be not numbered, but the structure of it and the sentence grammatically still needs to flow well. But if you look at it carefully, it's essentially one long sentence. Now, in the document also, usually a very important part of it is that there is a name of the body issuing the resolution. And we'll look at these a tiny bit more in detail just shortly, but just going over them quickly. There is a numbering of each document. There is numbering in terms of the document number so that you can track exactly who made the decision, which session of a particular body's meeting it comes from, and also which phase of the whole process that the document may be going through. So there's a lot of details actually in the numbering. Of course, then the numbering that I referred to before in terms of the paragraphs and things like that, that's another aspect of the structure of the resolution. But we'll get to that. Now then there's the name and the numbering of the main resolution. Then it usually has a preamble. It has certain words that it tends to start with. And what happens, the preamble kind of explains the reason for the resolution. Then you move on to the operative part of the resolution, which usually starts with numbers. These are the numbers I just referred to, and expresses the opinion of the organization and or the actions that that organization is requesting be taken. Let's look at some of those things a little bit more carefully. So here when we talk about numbering, this is some of the numbering that we're talking about here. This indicates that this is a General Assembly resolution from the 55th session of the General Assembly, and this was resolution number 2 in the series. The numbers here are not given anything in order of importance. One resolution may be perceived to be of more importance, but these numbers do not indicate any kind of importance. It's simply the chronological order in which that resolution was adopted during the 55th session. There's usually information down here as well in other locations of the resolution or the document, but this is the main one in terms of the UN system. This is the main number. To get more details, we'll go into the UN document area in a minute as I show you more how to use it. But you can also find there the information. You can go back and find the information about the symbols that are part of the numbering system. And so again, here you can see that most resolutions, A/res of some kind, they're General Assembly resolutions. If it's S/, it's Security Council. If it's E/, it's Economic and Social Council. And if it's ST/, it's Secretariat. Then you can notice that, as it says here, some bodies have special symbol series that do not necessarily directly reflect the parent organ. So, for example, the Committee on the Rights of the Child, they have their own numbers system and symbols. The United Nations Development Program has its own. Conference on Trade and Develop, its own, and UNEP, the Environment Program, has its own. Even though they may be programs and funds or subcommittees underneath the General Assembly. But always you can go back to the UN documents area if you come across something that you don't understand. I just want to underscore here again that the United Nations has so much information that an important part of being an expert, so to speak, in the United Nations is to know where to look for information when you need it. Not to remember everything, but to know where to look. And this training program is a little bit the same. By going through all of this, even if you don't remember absolutely everything here, you can always come back to this training program, to the modules, the lessons, the resources, and the links that are provided here, and you can refresh your memory and then go back in and find what it is that you need. In other words, this is a way for you to manage the large amounts of knowledge and information that are often needed to be effective at the United Nations without having to remember it all. Now back to the documents. Just part of this also, many times in the resolutions, especially in the when you get out of the main General Assembly or Security Council, you've got what's called a second component, second and tertiary components that indicate other subsidiary bodies and give you some sense of what is actually going on. For example, you can see here whether it was done in an ad hoc committee, whether it's a commission, whether it's done in a conference, whether it's a governing council, etc., etc. While most of the time, you will not need to know this kind of detail. However, if and or when you ever need to do some very specific research about an issue area, then if you are getting into understanding which nation voted a particular way or dealt with an issue a certain way or you want to understand more about the process of how a particular resolution was developed, things like that, then this kind of knowledge and information is very good. Beyond that, it enhances your understanding of the complexity of the UN environment that within which the diplomats and the diplomatic community and the United Nations staff themselves work. And if nothing else, again, I think it helps give you an appreciation of what they do, and it helps you get into their shoes and into their minds. An essential part, as I had indicated in the Express course, and we will go back to some of these points, is that to work effectively in the United Nations, we do have to understand their mindset. We do have to be able to speak to their world and not seem like we are totally oblivious to them, to their levels of concerns, to the way they work and get things done. And so even if we don't remember all of these details or work with a lot of this stuff, it is part of the way that you can understand the complexity of the United Nations environment, but also the importance of documentation, wording, meaning, and how they do their work through resolutions, agreement, consensus, and on. Next, I want to look at the preambulatory phrases. The preamble. The preamble begins with these gerunds: affirming, recalling, recognizing, further recalling, confident that, expressing its appreciation for. And there's a whole list of these, and I will attach below here, I will attach some documents that provide the full list of these in English and in French. And then the operative part of the resolution, as mentioned before, they have a different, these are active verbs: accepts, accepts with appreciation, acknowledges, adopts, affirms, invites, encourages, calls upon, reaffirms, further requests. So they're the ones that are used in the operative component of the resolution. Now I just want to, before I go on into the document area, I just want to mention a few things about drafting and adopting. I'm not going to go into the details here. We're not going to do any draft resolution exercises. That's a whole different matter, and no real need, especially in this, but just want to introduce you that the drafting and adoption process is where a lot of the work goes on, and it is where a lot of the consensus building is done. Because the drafting of resolutions, while one nation may produce the initial draft of what they envision, and even there, what the initial draft may reflect not purely what that nation would like to be in the resolution, but that's also comes back to matters of strategy, and they're very complex, and I'm not even going to go into that here, but I will just simply say that it may or may not be full force what they would like it to be, but that first draft will then be usually circulated amongst a few of those that that member state knows that they can, who are either interested in the topic or who are friendly to the topic, or who are those that they can begin to run this draft resolution by and start and get a sense of, you know, the water, the temperature on this particular issue. Then that, even that draft document, as they get responses from those who look at the document, they will begin to modify. And depending on what it's dealing with, what the time-sensitive nature of it is, may go through many, many rounds of adjustment and refinement and debate. So the actual drafting and adoption process is where a lot of the work actually goes on, where a lot of the consensus building takes place. Because in the end, most of the time, especially in the General Assembly, again, documents are adopted by consensus. In other words, the final document needs to be something that nobody will adamantly disagree with, because there's still a strong tendency not to want to bring something to a vote, unless it's a significant enough issue, and that may end up being, you know, the areas such as UN charter renewal or something like that. The whole process of drafting and adopting is one of creating a document that pretty much reflects the consensus of all parties. The drafting and adopting process does look at immediate objectives. It depends on the political capital of those who are initiating and proposing. Always, those that are drafting and adopting have to keep an eye on financial considerations. Most documents that do anything significant require action. Those drafting the documents have to look very carefully at the financial considerations of the proposal, because that alone can also hang up the whole process. If the financial considerations are too large and the operative aspects of the resolution cannot be fulfilled through existing structures and without significant additions to the financial allocation, then the resolution will have to then be passed on to the financial committee. And then that creates a whole new level of process that the resolution has to go through. And that could mean the end of that resolution. So financial considerations will always become a major part of the discussions in the drafting and adopting process. Many of these factors have to be taken into consideration, not just of the short-term immediate objectives of those who are bringing it to the table in the first place, but the long-term objectives of those individual organizations and or member states and the group that are working together to bring this resolution to the General Assembly. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea, a little bit more of an inside understanding of the resolutions process. It is not just a matter of the academic or the moral or the merit of the resolution itself. It has to be seen as whether or not it can be implemented, even within the scope of what the United Nations is able to do. And what the United Nations is able to do as a body has its own set of limitations. So in that sense, you've got limitations within limitations. On the other hand, at least there are ways in which to move processes forward at the global level. So now we're going to go into the UN document system. Now, you can get there straight from this link, or you can go from the home page. Before we go jump right into that, this component right at the end, I don't want to burden you too much, and you may not see an immediate need for this, but to know that you can always come back here and find your way back in to the appropriate places. But I want to show you and point out to you where there are some additional simple online training components for getting you started, and I'll take you to those briefly. Just also want to note that in the UN document area, in case you need to find it, there is an area that's called the UN Thesaurus that helps you understand some of the terms as they are used in the UN context and environment, and more specifically, just because they sound like they're terms and phrases that we understand the English, normal, everyday English use of, in fact, they have special significance, meaning in the UN environment. And the area that deals with UN terms and the UN thesaurus can help with that. Of course, even those two translated often into the six languages of the United Nations. So you can do your research in any of the six languages. Again, those languages are Arabic, Chinese, French, English, Russian, and Spanish. You've got various search options. Even within the UN system, there is not just one way of looking for documents. And so while you can look at that as being, hey, how wonderful, there's so many different ways, well, it can also mean that things can get a little bit more confusing. I'll just take you to a simple place that will go a little bit over how to look up documents based on their document number, and or if you want to use quick links. And you'll see what I mean by these when I show you in just a minute. And of course, there's always the Google alternative. Never forget that. Sometimes if you can't so easily find things using the UN document system, sometimes you can get leads, hints, or new ways in just by Googling things alone. So before we get to today's homework, there's a little hint. I'm going to go on over to the UN document system. Hold on. So here we are back at the English homepage. I just want to show you how to get in there. It's actually fairly simple. As you can see right here, in the resources and services areas, we find documents. So you click on that. Then you can come through and you can see there's quite a few bits of information here. Some of the Charter, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Millennium Development Goals, things like that. Over here, it gives you the different search methods. There's the official document system, which is very good if you know the symbol, the A/res/59/23 type of symbol. The UN Bibliographic Information System is far more comprehensive. This one is gets more useful for pursuing and following up on not the main resolution documents, but on some of the interim processes, meeting notes, and you know what some of the different individual member states or representatives of member states are saying in some of the sessions and things like that. So it's not the final documents, but it's more to do with the process. And then, of course, you've got this UN Multilingual Terminology Database that I just referred to before. You've got the database that deals with the terminology of the UN system in there. And through the UNBISnet, then you've got the thesaurus, the concept of the thesaurus. They were those two term search parts of the UN website that I had referred to. But for now, where I want you to go, we've made it to this page. Then I want you to come to the research guide. So we'll click on the research guide, and then you come right into the United Nations documentation research area. So this is where you can find your quick links, and just very quickly here what you can do. You can see there's your General Assembly, your Security Council, and then within the General Assembly, you can see your GA resolutions of the 65th session, and you can go in right in there, and you can see these resolutions already since September, about the 14th, I believe, the resolutions that have passed. I just want to point out here, there are resolutions. That's usually the reference document that it is dealing with, and, you know, the agenda item. But these here at the moment, while they've been assigned, A-Res 65116, 116 actually, as of today, there are 130 resolutions that have already been passed in this year's 65th General Assembly already. If we go down to the bottom of this, which is, you know, chronologically they start down here, you can see that these already have links. So already the document has been printed up, has been translated into the six languages, confirmed that this was the exact document that was agreed upon, because once they go into document status, then that's, you know, a serious level. So there's a due diligence process to make sure that everything is correct and accurate before it goes and gets translated into the six languages and then is posted as a document. But so this is where you can see the different documents right here. The resolution 65/9 is the last one that's actually been turned into a physical document in its six languages. And that then means it is ready to be picked up either as a paper document or is available to be downloaded in any of its six languages from the UN website. And this one here has not yet been through that whole process. And that brings us back to a point that I'll have you look at in your homework, but to note that a particular document will have a resolution and document number, Let me pull up one document here. Here we go. This particular resolution, you can see that this resolution has a date here. Now, that is the date that it gets turned into the final document. So don't confuse that with the actual date that the resolution was passed. So that indicates that this particular resolution was passed during the 41st plenary meeting of the year of this 65th session of the General Assembly, but it was passed on the 29th of October. It was, however, released as a document on the 23rd of November in 2010. So just another little note for if you are tracking down documents, days and dates, things to pay attention to. So we came in here in this area. This was one of the short links. We'll go back into this, quick links into this area. But from here, I want to go back out from the quick links for now, and I want to bring you down to the basic research tools, because I'm going to leave you with this little bit of work to do here in your online tools. Down here, you come down just a little bit further, you can see that there is a section on online training. It is not extensive, but it is simple and you can follow it. And if you want to get just a little bit of exercise with utilizing the UN document system, this side does not provide you with any links, but the online tutorials are right here. They're very short. You just need Flash. You go in and they just set up little exercises for you to do. And by doing these, it'll give you a bit of a comfort level with utilizing the document system here. So how to find a UN document using a UN document symbol. So that's in a case where you already know what the UN document symbol is, but you don't always know that. So of course you have to find other ways to look for the materials that you're actually looking for. And here it shows you how to do a couple of other things. And it provides you with course materials for workshops that have been provided in the past. So that gives you another resource. Just wanted to show you where that is. You can do a couple of these exercises yourself. And that's part of what I had here as the homework for today. After you go in and look at that area sometime, even if you need to take a break now from this, because we very quickly get into, you know, more than 30 minutes, but if you can get into and look up this kind of a document using the document number, then go in and discover what kind of a document it is. Here, I've given you another piece of homework that using the quick links, and if you go back, you know, just click back even in this video, if you can't remember where the quick links are, we go from the home page through to the documents area to the research area, and then you can find from there, you can find the quick links. And then I ask you to look for a specific resolution that is recent in the 65th session. And then what is the document number of that one? When was it adopted? And when was it circulated as a printed document? Again, just to confirm and to affirm that you are clear about the difference between when a resolution is actually adopted by the Council or the Assembly and when it actually finally reaches a stage of being a printed document and is released within the system, and so has a publication date. Well, that's about it for today. Again, another lot of information that's coming at you. I do nevertheless hope that you're enjoying this, even if some of it is a little perhaps tedious to you. But in the bigger picture, I am confident that this is broadening your understanding of the United Nations in ways that few people know. So as you understand, engage, and deal with either people in the United Nations or people who talk about the United Nations, you will discover that already you are becoming much more of an expert in the United Nations than probably 99.9% of the people on the face of the earth. I do hope you are enjoying this. I do hope that you are finding a new confidence and breadth of understanding as we share this time together. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.